You're with Lembit Opik on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Good morning, Planet Earth. Lembit Opik here, live on today's News Talk TNT. How are you? Thank you for joining me again for 4 hours of news and comment, some of which could be yours. Join me at tntradio.live. Have your say. And I have to admit, I've got something to say as well today. Last night was the world's largest music competition, the Eurovision Song Contest. And in just a minute, I'm going to tell you why I was appalled. Now, I am a totally open-minded person, but when family entertainment becomes sexualized, I have an issue. But before I tell you about that, let me tell you who's coming up today. We've got Vince Maple, who's the leader of a council. He's a Labour leader, and he runs a local authority in the south of England. I want to ask him about the continuing fortunes of the Labour Party, which hopes to become the government after the next election. The question will be, are they willing to accept anybody, anyone, who wants to join the Labour Party, given the controversial defection of a Mrs. Elphick to the party during the week. I'll explain that in a minute and talk with him about that as well in this hour. Then we have some other great guests as well today. We've got Guy Stanway, who is a music mogul. I want to ask him about standards in music. It really, really has offended me what happened yesterday on what should have been a family show. But Guy will not just be talking about that. He has wider views as well. Guy Stanway joining me in the second hour. In the third hour, we have Roger Tattersall, also known by his online persona, Tall Bloke. He runs Tall Bloke's Talk Shop, a skeptical blog set up in November 2009. He can wax lyrical on everything. And then finally, we have Alan Cook, who'll be commenting on a different political perspective. He's involved in Reform UK, which is the fastest growing party in the United Kingdom. They had a fairly good time as well. Now the dust has settled from the round of elections we had about 10 days ago in the UK. I want to ask him if his party is actually wrecking the chances of the Conservatives staying in power, or maybe that's their intention. And of course, you have your say as well. Just go to tntradio.live and you can join me there. As always, when I've got time, I'll read out your messages, positive, negative, questioning and critical. It doesn't matter. There's no censorship on this show. Although I don't read out swear words, that's the only thing I intend to avoid. TNTradio.live, and you'll find the numbers there as well if you want to phone in. All of that is good. Before I go to Vince, though, let me have a comment about last night's show. I don't see myself as a prude. I don't think that I censor anyone, pretty much. But family entertainment should be exactly that. I don't expect family entertainment to be intensely sexualized and therefore inappropriate for the viewing with my six-year-old daughter. But that's what happened last night. The Eurovision Song Contest was infested by a lot of mediocre songs, but that's a matter of taste and certainly not offensive. But the UK entry, in my view, was disgusting. It was entirely sexualized, indicating sex acts, which I won't describe on air, with nothing left to the imagination, really. What I was concerned about is that my six-year-old didn't understand what was being portrayed and was confused by it. I turned over. I have to admit, I had low expectations, but despite that, I didn't expect to be appalled on behalf of her. Was I personally offended? No. I thought it was crass. I thought it was stupid. But I don't expect that to happen in a program that begins before the watershed on British television. This was made worse by the fact that the commentator, Graham Norton, was praising it. I expected an apology. I said so in the public medium. I contacted the BBC. Nothing. I'm going to be making a formal complaint. I'm going to be insisting that they explain why not only did they countenance this kind of broadcast, but they actually praised it. The voice of the state-sponsored television station praised what was, in my view, a lewd and crass piece of broadcasting. It wasn't the only offensive thing, but I would say it was by a country mile the worst. Was I the only person who felt that way? Doesn't look like it. There's a public vote in this competition. The United Kingdom scored no points. No points. Zero out of a possible 12. I think that I speak for many when I say that this is just too much. There's a place for this kind of thing. If you flag it, there will be some people who would like to enjoy, perhaps potentially enjoy this kind of thing after the watershed. Perhaps they find it interesting, though I would not. But do not shovel it in to what used to be fun and innocent and quite kitsch family entertainment, the Eurovision Song Contest. The standards in this show have declined. It should have been banned by the organizers. It shouldn't have been permitted in the first place. But then for the state-sponsored station to actually praise this shows the depths to which they have stooped away from their charter. This won't be the end of it. And in the next hour, I'll be talking with Guy Stanway about his interpretation of it and also about wider music issues as well and the relationship between politics and entertainment. I welcome your views as well. Perhaps you think I am being a prude. Perhaps you think that I've taken it too seriously. Well, you can also, of course, have the dialogue with me on X, formerly known as Twitter. I was quite vocal about it last night because I was appalled. Let me summarize my view on this again. I'm perfectly in favor of free speech and free expression. I don't really think we should censor anything, but we should label those things which deserve some parental consent and consideration as potentially unacceptable. And this was way beyond anything that I considered acceptable. You have your say as well. Tell me off if you want to. Tell me that I should just lighten up a bit and then explain to me why it's okay for a six-year-old to see something like this. I didn't think it was acceptable. Maybe you did. Have a look. Tell me what you think. All of that with me, mainly on that subject in the next hour. But coming up next, I'll be speaking to a very accomplished Labour politician to give you a shop window on what's happening here in British politics. And that will be Vince Maple with me on the Lembutopic Show right here on TNT.
Conversations to inform and include.
It's meant for everyday people to understand.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Vince Maple, it's been a while. How are you doing?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. How are you?
Outraged. Outraged of London.
I can tell. I can tell. And I could tell that on X earlier today. I thought I'd check in with what you were doing. And then I saw your view shared with the world.
I was totally outraged by it. Now, I'm a libertarian. As libertarian as they come, I'd legalize all drugs. I would tax them because I don't think you can prevent addiction by banning it. I would have a very libertarian view towards people's sexual orientation and gender and activity. But I draw the line when a family entertainment is sexualized in such an overt way. Maybe you think I'm a prude.
I think it's a very, very difficult one because you're right around... When does a show... Watershed is an interesting thing, I think, these days, because I definitely the world feels a different place than it did a few years ago. And not every country has a watershed, particularly. So certainly from that perspective, I think there's something to discuss. And actually, if we're going to have something like that, it's got to be meaningful. But I can't say I was watching. It was kind of on in the background in my house, so I wasn't watching intently, unlike your good self, by the sounds of it.
Well, I wasn't watching intently, but I pricked up my ears when I saw the UK entry. It was a dreadful song, but that's not the point. My issue was, there's my six-year-old child and my three-year-old, and then I won't even describe it. It was musically talentless. But that's not the point. If you put the sound down, it would have just looked like soft pornography, essentially. And that was being beamed out to over 100 million homes around the world. And it was before what we do call the watershed in this country. It's just not acceptable.
The biggest non-sporting event in the world, I think, is Eurovision. So it's got a big audience. There's no doubt about it. I thought the UK entry, I thought the song was okay. I'm not a big fan of Oleg Alexander's music. It's not really my style. I'm off to my style is everything from Barry Manilow, who I'm off to see in a couple of weeks' time, to Scorpions and other loud guitar bands and everybody else in between. And I think the thing, I mean, there were several, even putting aside the kind of big political issues that have surrounded Eurovision this last week, which I'm sure I think you're going to talk about more in the next hour with your kind of musical expert.
Yeah.
I would say from my perspective, actually, there were a number of things you kind of go, oh, that's interesting to see. But I guess I'm a little more relaxed about these things. But there's a wider issue around pop music generally and sexualization. That's perhaps a different area to discuss. I know on social media, people have referred to other songs where that's perhaps not Eurovision songs. And maybe that's the differential. Eurovision, you know, 40 years ago, people were having skirts whipped off. You know, is that kitsch? You know, people could take a judgment on all of these things. I think the choreographer for that was there in the audience last night. So, yeah, I'm not an avid Eurovision watcher. I'm a stats person. I'm a stats geek. So I like the numbers at the end, probably more than most of the performances.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to, I'm only mentioning it to you because it annoyed me so much, Vince. And it's rare for me to have the censor's pen in my hand. But I think my concern was twofold. It was before what we do call the watershed in the UK. And for those who aren't familiar with the concept, it's an hour before which, a time before which, it's assumed that anything which is broadcast is acceptable for the whole family, including the faint-hearted, children, the aged, and those who have, say, strong religious beliefs. And this program began before that watershed period, and I found that totally unacceptable. The second thing was that Graham Norton, who was the state-sponsored, very highly paid commentator, was praising it. I expected him to apologize for it, because I don't want my children to see such overtly lewd and crass performance. When they're 18, they can watch what they like, but not at this age. So that's why I mention it, Vince. I'm not really trying to get you to agree with me.
It's good to be able to disagree agreeably. The final thing I would say, I mean, the BBC, when it comes to this, I mean, Sir Terry Wogan, you know, former presenter for the BBC, he kind of took all of it as a bit of a light-hearted, you know, a kind of general poke at life. And I think Graham Norton takes a slightly different approach, but I am less concerned about it. But that's what social media is there for, to share your views as TNT Radio. You will be doing that for the next few hours, no doubt.
Absolutely right. And you're a very good link man, because now we can talk about what you're here to do. Before we go to the break, Vince, let's understand your career. You've had quite a meteoric rise in politics, from a humble councillor, well, initially an activist, to leader of the council. Tell us what it means to be leader of the council and how you got there.
So this is, we're in this strange, for those who don't know British politics well, we have a strange period in local government where you have the election, but actually the change of council happens sometimes several weeks later. So it's more than a year since we won the election, but it's not more than a year since I've been leader of the council. So this first year has been exhausting at points, challenging, but an absolute privilege. We've had to deal with some really challenging stuff. But actually that start, you know, when someone said to me, I've been a councillor 17 years, so probably 18 or 19 years ago, they said, yeah, come along, get elected. It'll only be a couple of meetings every 6 weeks. That person lied to me. because you throw yourself into it. And the thing is, particularly in local politics, in England in particular, Scotland and Wales are ever so slightly different. They have devolved governments as well. But in England, actually, most people from most political parties, yes, we're political party animals, we've got the politics, but mainly we're there because we care about our communities. We're certainly not in it for the money, that's for sure. So from that perspective, people are dedicated public servants. And again, you know, be people wearing other coloured rosettes. I think you said you got someone from Reform later. They took their first couple of councillors a couple of weeks back. So, yeah, Labour are doing pretty well, both in local and national government, you know, ready to, I think, become the next national government. But in local government, for the second year running, we've been the largest party. And I'm really proud to be part of that.
I've known you for some years, and you have gone through the process from activist to councillor to leader. To what extent, we'll talk about policies and the strategies of Labour in a minute, but to what extent do you think it's a benefit to going through local government before, for example, aspiring to Parliament? I'll put my cards on the table. I think it's essential. I think people who don't go through local government miss a whole chapter of education in politics, and that's one reason we're so badly governed.
I think it's a real... I'm a huge advocate for local government. I'm a huge advocate for devolution, giving power back to people. I know it's a little bit of a political cliche, but one of the things I said last year is we won power to give it away to the people of Medway, and we've started to do that. One of the things I'm proud of, and again, I'm sure you can, I think you had a Conservative councillor on yesterday. So look, we'll all talk about our parties. And one of the things I'm really proud of as we head towards the next general election is the number of parliamentary candidates we have for Labour who have been part of local government teams, whether that's in opposition or in power. Of course, Labour in the UK have been out of power nationally for 14 years, but you've got councillors who have run, in some cases, multi-billion pound organisations, bringing those skills and expertise, as well as the ability to have expertise in specific areas. So two of my cabinet are standing for Parliament, Lauren Edwards in Rochester and Strood and Nashaba Khan in Gillingham and Rainham. In both cases, they've got expertise. Lauren, former Bank of England employee at Nashaba, has worked in the housing sector for a number of years. So they'll bring those real life experiences as well as the experience of representative democracy running stuff, which again, regrettably from my perspective, of course, the Labour Party hasn't done for the best part of a decade and a half. So I think if we get the election result, which polls are indicating, but there's only one poll that counts, of course, we'll need those people with those levels of expertise and knowledge to actually make sure on day one the Labour government can get up and running effectively.
Let's talk about that after the break. I want to explore the strategies and how you think Starmer's doing. And I want to raise some concerns I've got about how strange the bedfellows in politics can be. I'm thinking about Natalie Elphick. We'll come back to Vince in just a minute. Do keep your calls and comments coming. Go to tntradio.live if you'd like to have your say. I'm Len Bitopic. This is the Len Bitopic Show right here on TNT. See you after the break.
TNT. Sonia Paulton.
I am delighted to see that Parliament will finally be turning its gaze towards SLAPP today. This is strategic litigation against public participation, and it is a recognised tactic that wealthy people use, often against journalists, researchers and publishers, and they do it by using the law courts and with the aim of draining their target financially and psychologically, and with the purpose of silencing them. This has been going on for a very, very long time, and it's outrageous that more has not been done about it. Too many people have been able to hide behind the British law courts to pursue those whose job it is to document our world.
Sonia Paulton on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Facts and truth.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Len Bitopic Show. Before we go back to Vince Maple, my guest, let me read some of the comments. I've been criticizing the Eurovision Song Contest, specifically the UK entry, which I thought was a disgrace and frankly reputationally damaging to the country to a small extent. Lord Melbury says, Eurovision, what a political farce. I don't watch it. And a few other ones. The Satan-a-Vision song, calls, says Fox, contest was on a TV in a pub I was in last night, and the whole thing was a disgusting display of Satanism from start to finish. You're not the only person who said that to me, actually. Lord Melbury agrees with you. Hasn't been fun entertainment for decades, says Fox. Graham Norton is a complete prat anyway, says Mogden. I don't get on very well with him in real life, incidentally, I have to say, but that's not why I'm so angry. Lord Melbury says the biggest surprise is that Israel didn't win the contest. Interesting point. Hemingway says the entrant Ollie Alexander says he's ambivalent about the Union Jack flag, as it feels divisive and nationalist. They will fly it in the gayest possible way. He must be thrilled at getting no points. Moncton says, yes, amazing. Just a bloke, glad I missed it. Was at theatre listening to my daughter playing in the pit orchestra. Fantastic evening. I'm sure there was higher musical merit in what you saw than what I did. And on it goes, lots more comments there. Madrid says, I don't watch any TV. Well, that's not good, because if you're watching this, you're watching TV, you better be watching us. So Spoke says, hope it's not too hot at the Barry Manilow gig. Well, that plastic surgery, he's going to melt. Been some people critical of your choice of going to see Barry Manilow.
So you and I did a well-known national broadcaster's regional radio a few years back when we first met. And I remember we talked about when the Songs of Praise, which is a religious program on a Sunday, was broadcasting from the situation over in Calais. But as one of the kind of news in briefs, something happened with Carrie Fisher. And I happened to mention in passing that I'd never seen Star Wars. And then at the end of the show, I looked on social media. More people have been critical of me not seeing Star Wars than of my view on Calais and the Songs of Praise show. So once again, my choice of, in this case, going to see somebody, I can, Barry Manilow's not for everybody. I appreciate that.
I had a girlfriend who liked her, actually, him. Her name was Lola. She was a showgirl. But that was 30 years ago when they used to have a show.
So well, you've got a show now then, Bitten. That's a good thing.
A quick question before we go into the politics. Is this chap a climate crisis enthusiast? So asks Red. You know I don't think that there's a climate emergency. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this.
You needed 4 hours just on that with somebody who... what I'm not, and I don't claim to be, is a climate change expert. I have views which are, I think, different to yours, Lembit, and that's okay. We can disagree agreeably about that. But there are people, certainly in my political party, who have got far greater knowledge on that than I. So, and I appreciate that people will take a contrary view. That's okay. That's okay.
I'll come and see you and tell you that actually the science is settled, but not towards a crisis. But we'll not do that today. It's bad use of your time and mine and the viewers' time, because that's not what you're here for. I do want to read two more comments about Eurovision, though, because it develops so quickly. If I don't read them out now, they'll be lost in the thread. Hermetica says, Eurovision Song Contest, complete degeneracy, Lembit. Kali Yuga, as we discussed yesterday, the age of complete decline in virtue and the rise of darkness and evil. I did feel that myself yesterday, actually. Lord Melbury adds, today the music, if that's what it's called, takes second place to the imagery used to corrupt and shock the public. That's what's going on, in my humble opinion. And on it goes. Let's talk about what you're really here for. Your party has... as you said, been riding high in the polls. It had a reasonably good local election result. I expected you to do better, but it's good. There's no denying it. It looked like you're going to form the next government in October or November when the election will be held. And Keir Starmer will probably be the next prime minister. And yet you've chosen Natalie Elphick to be your latest high-profile recruit. Now, Natalie Elphick was controversial, very critical of Labour's position on a number of issues. And now she's welcomed in to the Labour fold. To many, it looks quite cynical. What's your view?
Well, I'd say two or three things to this, Lemmy. You all know with your previous life and your previous experiences, quite often in the kind of cut and thrust, particularly of British politics, it is quite combative in that sense and confrontational. People will, you know, slings and arrows to the other political parties, whoever your main opposition is. And that's not unusual. That isn't unusual anywhere we go. One of the things from a party of opposition, and this is whether it's local government or national government, the maths, I talked about my obsession more with the maths of the Eurovision than the performances. The maths of politics is very simple. If you've got 100 people, you need more of them to vote for you than your political opponents. And if you've lost the last election, or in the case of the Labour Party, the last few elections, you need to convince a number of people who voted for, supported, represented other political parties to say, actually, I can see now you're ready for government. So have I agreed with everything Natalie Elphick has ever said? No. Have I agreed often with some things that other people in my own party have said sometimes? Probably not. But actually, you know, the politics of the UK, we are broad churches. So, yeah, absolutely. I recognise that Natalie's been on that journey. She recognises, you know, she represents, like myself, an area in Kent, just to the south of London in the UK. I'm halfway in between London and Dover, basically, where she's based. It's very clear that she won't be our candidate at the next election. That's a guy called Mike Tapp, who I know well, who will be an excellent MP. The fact that we've got people who've been conservative, and I think back to last year's election here in Medway, where I was speaking to somebody on the doorstep, they were over 90 years old. They'd voted conservative for 70 years, and they put their trust in me and my team locally. So look, I want people to be converted to the Labour Party. I want them to feel, whether it's in local government or national government, we've got the right policies and programme for them. And I think Keir Starmer is the person to deliver that.
Let me read you some quotes from Natalie Elphick on immigration. When will the left admit this is no refugee crisis, but simply illegal immigration? She also said, don't trust Labour on immigration. They really want open borders. And this Christmas reinforces to me how vital it is that we bring the treacherous small boats crossings to an end once and for all. Now, that third one is in diametric opposition to what Keir Starmer is saying. He's saying that he isn't going to enforce any of this, unless I've misunderstood Keir Starmer.
He's been clear. Sorry, Len, but he's been clear. You know, we'll do two things, work with European partners to try and, you know, stop things there, but also use some of our wider governmental processes, MI5, MI6, to make interventions to crack down on the gangs. The issue here is not the individuals crossing, it's stopping them being offered that opportunity through illegal means. In my view, there should be a greater opportunity for those, particularly in war-torn countries, and we can see a number of those across the world, the opportunity where it's appropriate for people to seek asylum. We should be playing our part along with every other country who's able to do that. I think the alternative we've seen from the government with the Rwanda plan is fundamentally a failed plan, which is likely to be legally challenged and will cost, even if it's fully successful, £2 million per individual. What a huge waste of taxpayers' money, when that could be better spent processing individuals for those who have an absolute right to refugee status, doing that quickly. Who benefits from people hanging around more than a year waiting for the Home Office to do their job? Nobody. Absolutely nobody. The government have not got a grip on this. So, yeah, there is more to be done, and the government has failed. And if the MP who represents the area where most of the boat crossings are landing is saying the government have failed, that's a pretty big message.
But back to this Natalie Elphick point, she's quite clearly taken a critical view of Labour. Now, I agree with you. I'm not going to be pedantic. As a Conservative MP, she was obviously going to criticise Labour, likely to. But she seems to have a diametrically opposed view about the immigration issue to Keir Starmer. Starmer has more or less implied, as Elphick herself has said, that the Starmer would relax the immigration limits on the country. Am I wrong? Is he going to follow the Conservative position, in which case what's the point of changing the government?
Well, it's about, in this specific case, there's two specific issues looking at the crossings. No, I don't want any human being to feel that they are in a situation where they have to cross a really dangerous waterway, as we've seen time and time and time again. The government said they were going to stop the boats. Those are not my words. Those are the words of Rishi Sunak. When the Member of Parliament for the area from his party has said, actually, you're failing on this so much, not only am I going to be critical of you, I'm going to leave the political party she's been a member of. And look, this might sound a bit kind of emotional in one sense to listeners and viewers who aren't involved in politics. The crossing the floor, the changing to another party, defection, whatever you want to call it, that's a massive issue, because it's not just about, and it's not something I would ever do, just for the avoidance of doubt. But I've seen people do it. It's happened in Medway. It's happened elsewhere. One of our three MPs used to be a Labour councillor, is now a Conservative MP. Because, of course, it's not just going, I'll put on a different rosette. It's your social circle. It's everything you know, people in politics, most of their life is politics. So to then go, I'm changing my life, which is effectively what Natalie has done this week and others have done from all political persuasions to other one party to another. We saw, obviously, Lee Anderson a few weeks ago going from Conservative to Reform and all the other different directions people can move in. I'm not seeking sympathy for any politician at all. But the thing I would say, because this often isn't picked up, and Lemma, you will know this from your political background, it's far more for a human being. It is far more than just I'm changing my membership from one political party to another. There is so for someone to take that choice. I think that's a huge thing. And look, obviously, I'm angry in the past where people have left us for other political parties. Of course I am. Because, again, we're quite tribal in politics when it comes to it. But it's hard. It's hard for people.
Well, yeah, it would be easy for me to, as I said before, be pedantic and even supercilious and say, well, Natalie Elphick's not Labour. It's not interesting to the viewer for me to say that and to ask you on that. But I can ask you this, and I think this is relevant. Elphick's not re-standing, which is interesting. I presume she's been offered a peerage. Neither you nor I know this for certain, of course. It will be interesting, though, if she does get into the House of Lords for defecting. You heard it first here on Today's News Talk TNT, by the way, if that happens. But with the Conservatives quite obviously themselves thinking they're going to lose the election, are there limits to who you would have as a defection? Are there some people you wouldn't accept?
Well, it's not for me to choose, thankfully. I mean, the question was posed earlier this week, I think to Keir, but I might be wrong, on another broadcast outlet, not TNT, where he was asked, would you take Nigel Farage? And I think the point that was made there, it may not have been Keir, it may be another front bench member of the team, but they basically said Nigel Farage wouldn't want to join us. So from that perspective, of course, this is a two-way thing. You know, do we want to accept people? And do you know, no one's forced to join the Labour Party. We don't have that kind of, it's not like other countries where you have to almost declare your politics. You know, you look at US politics, those things are registered. We don't have that here. So yeah, I suspect there are not people. But if there was a Conservative councillor who came knocking on my office door in Medway and said, actually, I think you're doing a really good job and I think Rishi Sunak's failed, I'd have a conversation with them. I'd have a conversation because, again, it shows Labour are becoming the party of government.
Well, just having lots of people joining you when the other ship is sinking just means they want to live politically. It doesn't necessarily mean that they believe in the Labour Party. Digby Jones, who used to be head of the Confederation of British Industry, CBI, he got given a peerage, I think, by Labour, and very quickly left Labour and carried on. Yeah, by Gordon Brown. And then he became an independent almost straight away. Nice work if you can get it. I'm just wondering if there's a danger, though, of what's called entryism. Entryism ruined the Liberal Democrats, my old party, because in my opinion, people like Nick Clegg did a calculation. They decided they could get the furthest, fastest by joining the Lib Dems. He got to be deputy prime minister, ruined the party, and then cleared off to work in America in some social network. And the party was destroyed, in my opinion, from the inside out, because this great big influx of people who weren't really Liberal Democrats came in just to use it as a vehicle. There's a danger that could happen with the Labour Party.
Well, of course, some would say, I wouldn't necessarily say this, but some would say that happened after 2015 when Jeremy Corbyn was leading the party. There were a number of people. So again, it's about, you know, the Labour Party rule book is clear. You've got to, you know, adhere to the rule book, and that's around the values of the Labour Party and our policies, particularly if you're in an elected representative role. So yeah, there's always, you know, political parties, as I say, in this country are quite broad churches. So there may well be policy disagreements. Well, I say this quite often. I'm certainly, from the Labour Party perspective, I'm in a minority when it comes to the issue of electoral reform. I wouldn't want to see for our members of parliament, for the House of Commons, proportional representation. I don't think that's the right approach. I think first past the post works. People understand that, and people vote directly then for their MP. I have a different view for our second chamber, but most people in the Labour Party take a contrary view. I accept that. Most people, most members in the Labour Party would want to see a form of proportional representation. So again, you can within a political party on issues, on policies, on structures, you can have different views, and that's okay, as long as there is a kind of recognition that we do have to follow, you know, in, as you would with most associations, that rule book, those policies and procedures that you end up agreeing, in our case, most often at our annual conference, which this year will be in Liverpool, subject to whenever the general election is, of course.
The truth is, Vince, if I was in Keir Starmer's position, I'd accept just about anyone who looked like a good political story to join. I'd accept the little bit of unsurprising criticism from the wounded Conservatives. And frankly, if Nigel Farage wanted to join Labour and I was in charge, I'd welcome him. I don't really have an issue with the pragmatism of what he's done. I just worry that it does reinforce to me that party politics isn't really all that healthy. I'm involved in an NGO, non-governmental organisation, which doesn't have any political parties in it, but does have a democracy. I actually think it works better. I think the parties tend to fight for their own existence rather than the collective interest. But hey, that's just me. We can talk about that question, though, in the next part of the show, because I want to explore what would really change if Labour becomes the government. You're watching the Len Vidovic Show here on Today's News Talk TNT. Keep your calls and comments coming. I'm with Vince Maple, leader of a council and a senior Labour politician as such. And we're going to explore if anything would be different under a Labour government. All of that with me, Len Vidovic, here on TNT. See you after the break.
I didn't ask to be thrown in the streets with nowhere to go. I didn't think I'd survive. But I did ask for help, and Covenant House was there for me.
1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year. For these kids who didn't ask to be put in this unthinkable situation, Covenant House is there.
Covenant House helped me break the cycle of homelessness in my family. They gave me the love that I needed.
Over 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed tonight. When youth who are experiencing homelessness have a hot meal, a safe place to sleep, medical care, and love, they can overcome heartbreaking challenges and have a brighter future.
They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding. I'm a speaker, I'm an author. Covenant House really helped me and really helped mold me into the woman I am today.
If you or someone you love is asking for help, go to safeplacetosleep.org today.
Eggs. You can fry them, scramble them, poach them, boil them, or race them on a spoon. But uncooked eggs can be a risk for food poisoning. To be safe, avoid buying dirty or cracked eggs. Always wash your hands after handling eggs. And if you're concerned, pregnant, elderly, or have a poor immune system, make sure you cook eggs until the yolk starts to firm. Or look for new pasteurized eggs. For excellent eggs, handle them safely.
This is the Len Vidovic Show on Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. Coming up in the next hour, I will be having a full guns blazing criticism of the Eurovision Song Contest. But the right to reply goes to Guy Stanway. He is in the music industry, has been for decades, and has enjoyed senior levels there, including running his own record label now. I'm going to ask him about the relationship between morality, politics, and music, which I didn't expect to do today. But after what I saw last night, we asked Guy if he'd come on, and hopefully he'll find the conversation interesting. Don't know where we'll end up with it, but that's the beauty of live broadcasting at the home of free speech, which is TNT. With me still is Vince Maples, very kindly spending time with us, Labour leader of his council. is just before we go into the back into the policy areas, Vince, is being a leader of a council as good as you expected?
So it's hard work, and I could fill every day with 27 hours worth of stuff. But we've got amazing offices. I'm very lucky. I've got an amazing cabinet. But it's hard. It's difficult. And we've had challenges throughout. So on day one, Michael Gove took £170 million from our council for infrastructure, which was a bit frustrating, putting it mildly. We've had to deal with huge power outages and, you know, practical issues like that. And of course, people will share their views. And with the power outage, there was a great example. So our local press had a story about that. I went along to see them after my cabinet meeting, and somebody on the bottom half in the comments, like the comments here at TNT Radio, said, imagine it, your fridge is broken, your power's off, you can't watch telly, and then Vince Maple turns up to your house. And I thought that was a bit harsh. That was a bit harsh. But no, lots of people in Medway have been very, very supportive. And even when we're taking difficult decisions, people understand and can see the journey we're on.
I remember I used to live in Lambeth, which is a central London borough. And I had problems with the council. Short version is, because of their incompetence, the ceiling fell in. And then I was watching a TV show one day, and there was the leader of the council, Jenny Rabatz, in my house telling the builders who were trying to fix damage they'd created what a great job they were doing. That incensed me. Let me just go through your comments. Now I want to talk about this very point, the question from Lord Melbury. Ask your guest if he thinks there's a uni party in the UK and that their policies will not improve the health and prosperity of the nation. I'll come back to that in a moment, Lord Melbury. Let me just go through a few more comments, not all of which I expect Vince to reply to. Hermetica says, as I understand Labour, they want to do a deal with the EU to take our quota, i.e. let thousands more in illegally. That's how they intend to solve our immigration problems. Please correct me if I'm wrong. I'll come back to that with Vince in a minute. Hemingway says, why don't the Labour Party hire doctors, receptionists to replace Border Force? That's a guarantee that nobody gets into the country. Nice. Hermetica thinks that's an excellent suggestion. Lord Melby says people didn't vote for a deal. They voted to leave. And Starmer's sticking the middle finger up to the British people who democratically voted to leave the EU. The more I listen, the more I know I couldn't vote for someone like Vince Maple, says Lord Melbury. I very much doubt you're happening to live in his area. So there we go. Hermetica says that first past the post absolutely does not work. Interesting. I've become quite skeptical about the alternative systems, but I haven't got time to explain why. And Holly adds, it's Nutty Fudge Day. Well, nice. Somebody, I think, said that. Hemingway said that, actually. Holly says, I don't think I'd mind a power outage. That means the telly box won't work. Just send Keir Starmer, I think, from Reigate Grammar School to Davos. Goodbye. Right, this question, uni party, which has been raised by my viewers. It seems to me there's very little difference between Conservative, Labour, and to an extent the Lib Dems these days on the big issues. They all support putting billions into the war in Ukraine, which I think, I'm coming to the view, is unwinnable. They all opposed a ceasefire in Gaza, even though the overwhelming majority, like 90% plus of the victims, are innocent civilians. It's hard for me to understand the difference in economic terms. And they all get very strung up about gender identity politics. What changes if Starmer's in Downing Street instead of Rishi Sunak?
So this is, you know, this is something I hear on the doorstep occasionally. It's not a new comment. In fact, I think I've heard it since I've been involved in politics, certainly around you are all the same. I would respectfully say, actually, there's some quite fundamental differences. One of them, which I think is probably more important than perhaps it has been in the past, is around competence. So this isn't about a specific policy, but this is about the ability to deliver for the British public when you're looking at national government. We've had, you know, in my view, and I would say this, wouldn't I, perhaps viewers would say, since Boris, you know, Boris Johnson, who lied to Parliament, lied to the country, didn't act in many ways as a Prime Minister, in my view, should. You then had Liz Truss, who had an economic experiment which failed, And she was kicked out quicker than it was for lettuce to wither away. And then Rishi Sunak, who just, in my view, just doesn't get it. And that isn't about him and his personal background. You know, some people will make those comments that I don't really like that sort of political attack. But for me, it's about saying, you know, can he get the good job done? Compare that to Keir Starmer, who, you know, entered politics actually quite late in life, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Was leading a big organisation beforehand. So the ability to not only lead that organisation, but change it positively, to me, says actually those sorts of skills are quite important. He's personable. So when we've had him here down in Medway on a couple of occasions, in fact, four occasions now, people love stopping and talking to him. Lambert, you will know what there's something called a political visit. So a senior politician will come to your community, and it's one of those things that takes hours and hours to prepare for perhaps a 2-hour visit. And there's kind of what could possibly go wrong. And you know, some of these things are managed tightly, of course, but there is an element of the unknown. So when we took Keir out in Gillingham for the very first time, and this white van pulls up, and the window winds down, and there's that moment, and then the guy said, "It's brilliant to see you here." They talked about football. Keir's obviously a big football supporter, Arsenal supporter like myself. You know, and that ability to connect and engage, you know, both on the kind of big platform, but also on a one-to-one basis, and people wanting to stop and not stop, wind the window down, abuse and drive on, which does happen to politicians, I have to say, of all political persuasions. To me, actually says Keir is that person who's ready to lead our country on all those levels. On some issues, of course, the world of politics, there will be a level of consensus. Consensus politics isn't always necessarily a bad thing. It's about, so you can understand what the issue is. And a good example of that in the UK is actually social care. So looking after our most vulnerable people. We've had, in my view, a pretty good solution to healthcare for the last 75 years in the UK, the NHS. Is it perfect? No, but it's pretty good. But for social care, it's almost seen as a second class issue compared to healthcare, and the two are intertwined. So for something of that nature, you do need to try and build a political consensus, because the solutions are going to take more than one, two, or even three parliaments to get fully embedded.
Well, yeah, there's a school of thought which I personally do subscribe to, that the Conservatives have thrown in the towel for the next election. They don't expect to win. It's only the size of the defeat that they're arguing about now. And then it's all down to how well the right reorganizes itself. That's where Reform UK becomes powerful. If they can unite the vote, no doubt at that point, Nigel Farage will extract a high price, then the pressure's on Starmer to do better. But here's the question. Let's get to specifics. Why did he oppose a ceasefire? Oppose a ceasefire. Labour leader opposing a ceasefire in a war which, out of 34,000 killed people, has probably killed 31,000 civilians.
Look, and I think, look, this is a challenging set of circumstances. Let's be clear. This is not a simple, straightforward issue, because you've got, in some cases, decades of history around this wider issue. Of course, a lot of this was triggered by those incidents on October the 7th. I do think the position we now have as a political party is the right one, but I do recognise you've got the balance between a state being able to defend itself. I think that's not, you know, most rational people would say if a state is attacked, it's not unreasonable to defend yourself, but it's about reasonable. What is reasonable force? And I think what we're seeing, and what we're likely to see, regrettably, in my view, is probably unreasonable, using that language. So I think we're in the right place now. But at the start of this process, it is right. You know, if we're attacked by another country, it is right for us to have the right to defend ourselves appropriately and reasonably. And again, that reasonable is key. The other important thing for me personally, this is not the Labour Party, this is Vince, a bloke from Medway. I'm quite a big supporter in the concept of institutions. Institutions matter. I know not everyone feels that way, but I certainly do. So actually, the United Nations, I think, has a key role to play in this. And actually, that's where, again, if you think back over the last two or three decades where there's been international conflict, their role in trying to make sure that there's a clear position in line with all appropriate international conventions, treaties, etc., I think is important. And of course, over time, that has moved, particularly because of the votes of the US and the UK. So that's where I think we probably are on that.
Well, it's a long answer, but I have to tell you, leaving aside whatever my own political leanings are, I think Keir Starmer made a catastrophic mistake, and it was counter to what I believed the Labour Party stood for when he supported Netanyahu's relentless assault on Gaza. Netanyahu's responsible for the killing of almost 2% of the population. 2%! That's a stunning number. And Starmer, leading a Labour Party, which I assume tended to prefer peace to war, has sat round lamely agreeing with the Tories. In other words, there wouldn't have been any difference if Starmer had been the Prime Minister at the time, would there? We'd have got the same uni-party result. Support.
No, I would respectfully disagree with that. Of course, don't forget, when there was a vote in Parliament, it was the Labour position that was taken, because neither the Conservatives or the other third party, the SNP in that case, voted on it. So that's the most recent vote that we've had as a Parliament.
Which actually proves the point, though. We've actually got Labour policy now. They've got Labour policy now, and the Tories go along with it. That simply adds to my case.
But I think even though we are not, you know, our country is not at war, we're not in the dispute. We clearly, as a member of the UN Security Council and other senior roles in those global institutions, we have a role to play. We have an important role to kind of show that leadership. And I think this is the difficult balance, isn't it? Because on the one hand, you know, absolutely right and appropriate that if a country is attacked, they have the right to defend themselves. I would say strongly that has gone far beyond that. And as a local elected representative, the key message I put out very quickly was that it's my role to make sure we do not see an increase in Islamophobia, or indeed an increase in anti-Semitism, which there was a risk of both, you know, impacting people in my community as a result of this international dispute. And as a locally elected representative, that's really critical for me to say, actually, we need to support both of those communities who would be at risk from those who would want to use this dispute for other means.
No major party in Britain is Islamophobic nor anti-Semitic. But I do think, I just put this in parentheses, I think it's very important that we are allowed to criticize Netanyahu, not because of his religion, but because he's a dreadfully, dreadfully aggressive person willing to kill civilians at all, just about any cost, in order to pursue his aims. That's maybe for another time.
No, I would agree with you. And in fact, again, I referred to the fact of the first broadcast outlet you and I both met on. I think I said similar on that several years ago, because, of course, he is not new to the role he's in.
And lastly, it was nearly out of time. What's the difference between Labour and Conservatives about Ukraine, which I've considered now to be an unwinnable war? Well, whether you think it's the right policy or not, there's no difference in the policy that the Labour Party and the Conservatives are pursuing there. Two of the biggest issues facing the country, and there's no change if there's a change in Downing Street.
And look, if you go back, next month is 80 years since D-Day, and I'm not comparing the three disputes for the avoidance of doubt and the three conflicts. But actually, one of the things we saw during the Second World War was a level of political consensus, because actually, again, in a grown-up democracy, in those challenging times, where you can, you do want to build a consensus. It sends a much more powerful message to the world to say we are united on this issue. That won't happen in every case. There will be differentials of views. But I think it's no bad thing where a level of consensus is reached. And it happens to be that in this particular case we're talking about with Ukraine, I agree with that consensus position. But others would always say, well, why aren't the opposition opposing everything ever? Because actually, grown-up politics is more nuanced than that. And actually, if there is consensus, that is not a bad thing, particularly when you're dealing with an international situation like the one in Ukraine.
Well, I'm sure there's one consensus here, which is you're always good value to have on the show. Thanks so much, Vince. We could talk for ages. I actually didn't realise we've run out of time. Very interesting to speak with you. I hope you've enjoyed the experience and do come back soon. And we'll always put you under even more pressure when you actually form the next government. That is Vince Maple, who's a Labour leader. Very candid. I hope you found him interesting. You don't have to agree with him, but I'm sure he tells it like it is. Coming up next, we have somebody else, Guy Stanway, who I asked to join us this morning because of my sense of outrage about what happened at the Eurovision Song Contest. So that will be our next guest here on the Lembotrophic Show right here on TNT. I'll see you after the break.